does have it all. All of our pre-owned vehicles are Hubler Q certified, which include a 128-point vehicle inspection, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and two warranties. A two-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, and a 30-day, 1,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Visit any of our 13 locations today, or click drivehubler.com. Hubler has it all.
This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee.
White flag waves, one to go for Scott McLaughlin.
I'm wanting to go back to Texas, a place that I love. I know I've got a fast car and I know we can, you know, drive a fast race there.
Look out, look out. Malukas is first one on the list. Got to go to the inside. McLaughlin can't get there though, not close enough.
I know what I need to do different. I need to experiment a little bit more in the higher groove. Something I didn't need to do because our car was so good, we could run the low line and just focus on the race we needed to run.
Teammate is coming. Here comes Joseph Newgarden on the high side. Newgarden on McLaughlin. It's going to be a drag race. Newgarden has done it. Newgarden wins on the final lap. How about that? Holy
f***. Oh, you're a man.
It was tough to do that on a teammate, especially after Scott run such a great race. He pretty much led the whole thing. The opportunity to, you know, have the door open up last lap, last corner was just, you know, very, very cool. I'll never forget that one.
It hurt big time, but there's nothing more than the best part about this is trying to turn a negative into a positive, and that's what we'll try and do this year.
Joseph Newgarden and the PPG Chevy wins in Texas.
Hello, welcome Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan in Indianapolis. It's been a little while, we can say it. Stay with me, everyone. It's race week for IndyCar coming up. Texas Motor Speedway, Sunday morning, Texas time, noon, prompt, Eastern time on NBC, 12:10 command, 12:15 green flag. Thanks for joining us tonight. Kevin Lee, Kirk Cavan, Eddie Garrison is in our Indianapolis studios. Coming up on the show in just a little bit, David Malukas for year number two at the big fast track in Texas. And plenty to come on the program tonight. We'll get into all this later on, including some Indy 500 news and notes. Maybe even more than 33, 34. Might we see 35? We'll get into that. Kurt, I watched the 30-minute cut down this afternoon again. I know we talked about it last week, and the recollection was that race was pretty good. At least from the 30-minute cut down, that race was really entertaining last year.
It was, and you know, we've had different kinds of races there. It's interesting. We had a little chat with Scott Dixon earlier today, and you think about over the times that we've raced at Texas, sometimes it's daytime, sometimes it's nighttime. Sometimes there's been this NASCAR adhesive to the track, PJ1, as we've known it in the business. Sometimes it's been pack racing. Sometimes it's been single file. But it goes back a long way at Texas. And I was also thinking about the fact we've been racing there since 1997, June of 97. I was 32 years old then. I mean, this has been a long period of racing. Now, this will be the 36th race we've staged at Texas. It's so much a part of the history of this sport now, or at least the modern part of this sport, the most recent part. And it's, you know, here we go again. I'm ready for it.
I was in junior high, so I don't know about you. We'll just go with that. This is an important weekend. This is an important market. This is an important event with some of the reasons that you just talked about. This racetrack and this event has heritage, it has legacy, it has atmosphere, it's unique in the schedule, it's difficult to find ovals, and it also has had a very dwindling attendance, if we're being honest, for quite a few years. I know there are efforts ongoing to change that. I don't know how much it's going to change. I also, as we've talked about before, every business model is different, and it's possible that this one doesn't fully depend on having a really nice crowd, but it'd sure be nice because I'd like this one to stick around for a while.
I would too. It's one of those races each year that I really look forward to. It's been one of the favorite places to visit. That's a great market to visit. It usually comes in a time of the year, you know, it's still early in the season. People are still excited about, you know, their championship hopes. Everybody's still kind of in the hunt, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had all kinds of different winners, even though Team Penske and then Scott Dixon on the Ganassi side have largely dominated. But, you know, you've had unique winners. I think about Jeff Ward. I think about Graham Rahal, Justin Wilson, Ryan Briscoe. You know, those are just a few that pop out. And it has been, you just never know. It's one of those places you just never know. So you go into the race thinking, you know, holding your breath because it's so thrilling. It's, you know, there's just aren't many places that with the unpredictability and let's be honest, I mean, the danger factor is something that's attractive to a lot of people and it certainly holds your attention. And we've seen some of the real highs and lows of the sport at that racetrack. So yep. It's just consistently delivers. Even in the years when it wasn't the greatest race, it still delivered.
And it's always been a fine line between what we want for action and entertainment. And sometimes that might have been a little bit too much. Leaves us just wanting to survive and move on. And then there have been other times where, we're going to need a little more action than that. And that's the hard part. It's so difficult to get the aero package correctly to produce good racing. I would say this, I felt like last year, now don't get me wrong, this is still massively dangerous and there takes a great deal of bravery, but I don't believe anyone came away saying, well, this is nuts. We shouldn't be doing this ever again, which has been the case at certain mile and a half tracks before in the past. I think they have the chance to have a pretty decent package going on right now.
Yeah, I do too. Scott Dixon, again, was on the teleconference today from the IndyCar standpoint. And, you know, he was kind of asked the question, you know, about, you know, what do you think? What have you heard about the changes to the track, if any? What do you know about the changes to the car, if any? You know, and he said, you know, even in years I've known, you don't really know until you show up. You don't know what the racing is going to be like. You don't know what the conditions are like. Some years it's hotter. You know, this race, you know, made its mark in June. So it was always just unseasonably warm, at least for most of us that didn't live in Texas. It was hot and steamy. And so those races were different than one that'll be held, you know, on the first couple of days of April. So it'll be a different kind of experience. And I'm not sure what to expect once we see cars roll out. And we may not know to the green flag drops or at least the end of the first tire segment on Sunday. So you just don't know how if the tires are going to, you know, and I say degrade in the most flattering of terms, you know, you run those to the end of their usefulness. And then it's up to the drivers to kind of hang on, which is part of what makes passing and interesting racing. But my point is, you just don't know until you get to the end of one of those segments what it's going to be like and who's going to succeed.
I think there are some aero changes, but like Dixon was telling people in the conference call, you never know. But there are some tweaks, and some will figure it out, and some won't. No excuse if it's been that this is too hot. I'm not going to go sit out there all day for a 4 p.m. or a 6 p.m. race. You know, they've tried to do night racing, and the problem is in June, you got to start it at 9:15 Eastern time to have any hints of a night race. So let's just start it early. And the high temperature on Sunday, as of now, according to AccuWeather, 80 degrees, low of 66. So with an 11:15 local green flag, you know, we're looking at the low 70s for start time and still probably in the mid 70s by the time the checkered flag hits. And if you're wondering, and I don't know this, I was on the NBC call today. I listened in. I'm not there this weekend, but I just listened in to see what I learned. And I did learn a couple of things in the competition call. I'll share in a moment. But I don't know specifically why the race. Some might ask, why is it at 11:15 local, noon Eastern? My guess would be, well, one, there are two options. One, there's something that NBC needs to put on the air at 2 o'clock or 2:30 Eastern time, which is very possible. But two, even beyond that, this might have been by design that, you know what, our best chance at a TV audience isn't at 3 o'clock. We've seen this before, those early start times. So if you start at noon, you may know this. I haven't been able to participate in the basketball tournament this year, but the games next weekend will not start at noon on Sunday, right?
So That's correct.
Yeah, so there will be nothing going on at that time as far as basketball. Now, there's always something going on, but if you look at a schedule, there's less competition at noon and 1 than there is, say, after 2, 3, 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon.
So I haven't looked at this weekend's schedule either. Maybe I'll look that up during the break. But the basketball schedule last Sunday started at 2:30.
Yeah.
So that would be perfect. That would be perfect. And you'd see like 2:30 and, you know, 5 o'clock for the college basketball games. Actually, we don't have Sunday games this week. It's the Final Four. So it's Saturday, Monday.
Saturday, Monday. Okay. Yeah. See, so, I've even lost. Yeah, I knew that, but I've lost track of everything. I didn't participate this year, and I'm quite sad about it. I missed it. I just missed it.
It's been a great tournament, and but I did think that the other day that it would be nice if the games didn't fall during the start time of this race. Then I remembered Final Four is Saturday, Monday, so that'll help us at least gives you an extra chance.
As far as what to expect, you know, last year, one of the things that was tried was the high line practice, and some were not interested in doing that, but the racing was better. The feeling was that it helped. And also, by the way, there was a limit on tires. So not everyone was going to be invited to do that, even if they all wanted to. So I'm hearing that every team, every car is participating in this. And I don't have the schedule right in front of me, but I believe it starts really early on Saturday morning with a practice, and then qualifying is up next. And then after qualifying, this is a different change this year too. It was an impound race last year, parc fermé as they call, meaning you can't fully trim for qualifying because you need to race what you qualify. That's what it was last year. It's kind of in between this year. They're going to, after qualifying, have 30 minutes where they can make changes on pit lane. So that's not back in the garage where they can do even more, but only 30 minutes. And it's not just a 30-minute clock. It's, I think, 30 minutes until that highline practice begins. And so now we were kind of wondering, well, some teams might want to really make some changes and go after it in qualifying and then decide we'd rather use that highline practice time to prepare the car for the final practice, which is an hour or so after qualifying. That won't be an option. So you will have 30 minutes to work on the car, whether you participate in the highline practice or not. If you decide not to participate in that extra second groove practice, you are not allowed to touch the car at that point. So that leaves everyone on a level playing field. So from that standpoint, that helps encourage that situation. So I think you'll see some people go after it more in qualifying, but this kind of keeps people from really going after it, which is not bad. Discourages you from doing something that might put you in the wall.
Yeah, I have the times, and you don't have to write them all down at this moment, but I'll give you a sense for just how quick the turnaround time is. Saturday, the practice, and I'm going to give the Eastern times because that's the times that most people will work from, and you can check your local listings on that. But 9 to 10 a.m. is the first practice on Saturday. But this is the key part. Qualifying runs at 12:15. It'll last about an hour till 1:15. So from 1:15 to 1:45 is this break, at which point Group A, which is half the field, will run for 30 minutes in the high lane. Then the other group will run. And so that practice session, you know, rubbering in the track will go from 1:45 until 2:15. And then the final practice is at 2:30. So 15 minutes after that session ends, Here we go again. So you're right. The turnaround is quick. Part of the reason for the earliness, it's twofold. You're having to practice in a time that's, you know, conducive to when you would race, theoretically. And second of all, you got a truck series race for the first time in several years. And so the trucks will be intermixed. They'll have a morning session after the IndyCar practice that ends at 10, and then they will take over the track Saturday evening. So IndyCar will be done at 3:30. All of that on Peacock and and then catch the Sunday race at noon Eastern on NBC.
By the way, having a truck race, I think, is good. We want the event to be stronger. We want to encourage people to have more reasons to come. And that's been one of the challenges with oval races. There's just not enough on-track activity. So you're going to have a lot of on-track activity on Saturday and then the IndyCar race on Sunday. PJ1 has not been applied since last year, so it shouldn't be any worse. The track should continue to get better, and the second groove practice will help a little bit. We asked if there's going to be a line painted, and sort of painted. It's more of like a chalk-type substance, because that was the first thing. Well, wait a minute. Is it, you know, the slick type of paint? No, it's not. And you'll probably be able to see a little bit of it when you get to Sunday at the race, but it'll kind of fade away. But just encouraging people of this is where we'd like you to go up and test. Oh, by the way, if you qualify early, there's no advantage to start working on your car. The cars are in impound until the final car has qualified, and then they will all be able to touch the cars for 30 minutes to turn them around to get them into race setup for that afternoon. So I'm excited about that. I am going to be a fan on the couch. I am going to watch real time, not delayed. I'm going to try the NTT app and see how that works. I have not opened it at this point, so I'll watch some onboards and timing and scoring and experience it, and that will give me a better perspective moving forward. And as far as the race itself, you know, thinking back to last year, not much should have changed. While Team Penske cars weren't great at the Indianapolis 500, they sure were great at this track.
They were. They went 1, 2, and 4 in the final results. But keep in mind that the Ganassi guys were very good as well. In fact, those two teams field 7 cars on a regular basis and will again do so at Texas this weekend. And they finished 1 through 7 last year. So the other thing when you're talking about rubbering in the track, if you have more participants in that, you know, high groove session, what do we have? Probably 8 to 10 to 12 cars do it last year. If you have more cars participate this year, that would be good. And this will be the largest field since 2011. There will be 28 cars this weekend, the 27 that were at St. Pete, the one substitution being Marcus Armstrong replaced by Takuma Sato, and then the addition of Ed Carpenter's car, the third car at Ed Carpenter Racing. So 28 car and driver combinations at Texas. So that'll make a good field. You know, it isn't that long ago, even as early as 2019, just a couple of years ago, that we only had 22 cars. So up to 28, and that'll be a thrill a minute, as they say.
We got a little taste of what was to come into May with Marcus Ericsson running up front, finishing third in this race last year. For those that don't remember, and we hear the highlight to start things off, Joseph Newgarden got by Scott McLaughlin on the last lap. Lap traffic played into that. That really bogged down McLaughlin at the end. And, you know, as he's learned more, you know, you would say you've learned something more to deal with that. That's still difficult. Veteran or not, I feel like whoever's running second there has the advantage. So I'm not just going to say that's total lack of experience on McLaughlin. I think that could have happened to a veteran as well. But that certainly was a factor in Newgarden getting the win.
Yeah, McLaughlin led 186 laps. By the way, to point out, it's not a big deal, but it will be for your scoring at home, if you will. 248 laps has been the norm there, based on track configuration and trying to come up with, you know, a consistent number. 248 has been the number of laps. This year will be 250. So a couple extra laps. I mean, guys like us who frequently think of 240 laps or 248 will have to recalibrate just a hair. But yeah, Joseph only led 3 laps last year. There actually were a lot of leaders last year, but there were 12, which was the most any race had last year. But it's a little bit skewed because it basically came when McLaughlin pitted. He led the first, 58, 60 laps and really was never threatened until Joseph came up late in the race and caught him essentially in traffic. So this will be an oval race that McLaughlin certainly wants to score, because he's not had one of those just yet.
Legitimate leaders last year: McLaughlin, Newgarden at the end, Power, Erickson, I think, a little bit. And I remember Rinus VK making a pass under green to go for the lead. And I think those were the people up front. You know, others that were impressive last year. I want to see what Kyle Kirkwood does in an Andretti car, because he was moving forward last year. Devlin DeFrancesco probably wants a little reset, made a little contact three different times and a little bit of a gray area each time until the third was one. Yep, there's no doubt that he made a mistake on that one.
No gray area on that one. He took out, went below the yellow line or the white line and lost control, and that caused Graham Rahal to lose control, and Graham slid into Elio and took those two to the wall. DeFrancesco did as well. And Santino Ferrucci.
Sato was the first one that just kind of a touch. And I don't know that I can say that that was either one's fault. Might have been one of those deals. But I'm really curious to see Sato in a Ganassi car warming up for the Indy 500.
Agreed. And Santino Ferrucci has always run well on these ovals and had a great move to get out of trouble or avoid trouble, or maybe he might even just say, I got lucky and didn't hit DeFrancesco in that spin. But he has posted three different top four finishes, one of which came at Texas. So he'll be fun to watch in the Foyt car.
The Arrow McLaren cars were really strong. Both drivers had issues on pit lane that took them out of contention. And then eventually Rosenquist had a mechanical issue. So they've got three cars to watch coming up this weekend. And we will talk more about what's coming up at Texas. We'll address some of your comments at KevinLee23, at Kurt Cavan. Plenty more to come, including Indy 500 conversation. Instead of us talking about it, let's talk to a driver who can speak about driving at Texas. David Malukas joins us coming up. Trackside 93.5, 107.5 The Fan.
Hi, this is David Malukas, and you're listening to Trackside.
Thank you for joining us tonight and staying with us. It's Trackside on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan, as we get set to watch racing from Texas Motor Speedway Sunday afternoon. You can listen to it here on the radio, and you can watch it on NBC, noon Eastern, 12:15 is the green flag, and one of those with a much better seat than any of us will have is the driver of the number 18 HMD Trucking, Dale Coyne Racing, with HMD Motorsports Honda. It's David Malukas. David, how are you?
I'm doing very good. Thank you guys for having me. I hope you guys are having a great day.
We are. All right. We got a lot of things we can cover. We'll go back to St. Pete a little bit and just talk about where things are at. But what's the anticipation for a driver? And I would think one of the more unique racetracks and weekends that we go to. What are you thinking as you head to Texas?
Oh boy. Well, firstly, there's a lot of excitement. I mean, I can't wait. I always feel like St. Pete, I don't know, kind of just feels like an expedition race. You know, it's a little bit like, I just feel like a race before the season actually starts, which is good, especially when I had my first season. It kind of gave you a couple of weeks to, you know, work on the things that I need to before the actual season starts. But going to Texas, I mean, it's very special. Honestly, out of all the ovals, I think it's one of the most difficult when it comes to racing, you know, doing that outside line. I know this year they're going to try a few new things on helping to grip up that outside line. But overall, I mean, I'm really excited. And, you know, I know we have a good car prepping for, you know, we've done a lot of things. We try to get some DIL days, but unfortunately we couldn't get any. But I don't know. We're very, very excited, looking forward to it.
Did you go down when Stingray was there, your teammate, last week for the rookie test?
I did not know, but I did look over all the data and all the information they got, and they were actually there for 2 days. So we got even more data than we actually even needed. So, you know, our car looks very good, you know, with the data from Stingray, and, you know, with all the from St. Pete and the testing that we've done with Stingray, it's our cars are actually very similar to each other with the way we like to drive them. So the data was very good.
We were talking about this last week, and, you know, some might say for a young driver, you want to have a Ryan Hunter Ray like Callum Ilott had last year, someone that's really experienced, that's won a lot of oval races. I wondered if it might not be just as valuable and in some ways more valuable to have someone like yourself who can remember exactly what it was like doing this new experience as recently as a year ago. Can you help Stingray because it's so fresh in your mind?
Yeah, I think there's two ways to look at it. You know, of course, you always want a veteran. You know, they have a lot of information that you want to unpack and try to get all of it as much as possible and add your own twist to it. And obviously, it helps you. But, you know, coming from last year, I had Takuma, and he helped me a ton, you know, with the ovals especially. And there's a lot of that information that I can still, you know, pass down to Stingray. But also, for my first season, you know, that was just last season, right? That was my first, all these experiences were new, and I know exactly how he's going to feel and the questions he's going to have, you know, all of it's going to be fresh in my mind, like you said. So I really do think I'll be a big help, and I'm an open book. Any information, any data I have for him, it's going to give it to him, because the quicker he gets up to speed, the better it's going to be for the both of us.
We had Scott Dixon on the teleconference earlier today, and while what I'm about to relay to you isn't really that significant from Scott, it was kind of interesting. He said, you know, having experience at Texas is good, and certainly you'd rather have experience than not have experience. But he said there's something to be said for just not knowing what you're getting into before it happens. At Texas, is there any validity to last year when you got there and you just like, I have no idea what's going to happen here, and then you just go race?
Yeah, you know, when you don't know what's going to happen, and you know, you hear, you know, people saying, "Oh, this outside line," you know, I never experienced it myself. So, of course, early on in the race, I mean, I was making those outside moves a lot, and it helped me gain a lot of positions. You know, I haven't experienced it myself yet until, you know, later on in the race, you know, when the marbles started to get up there, I made a move on Daly, and I remember IndyCar highlighted it, and I had a big moment. I mean, it was like almost, you know, ended my race early. So. Yeah, I mean, it was at that point that I knew. I was like, okay, yeah, so now I've experienced this. And now going into this season, you know, I'm going to be definitely a little bit more hesitant going on that outside lane. But, you know, like you said, you know, not knowing what you're getting into, it does help in many situations.
I was going to ask you about that. I would say that's more than a moment. I watched that again today, and I would essentially say you crashed, but you didn't crash. And you kept your foot in it, and you really didn't lose any gap to Connor ahead of you. How did you do that?
I mean, to be honest, I could say like, oh, yeah, you know, I really held on to it. And honestly, it was just pure luck. You know, the slide started to happen so late into the corner. And I think that's why I kind of crashed but somehow saved it. I think it's just because I was already, you know, kind of driving a straight line. So it ended up being, I mean, if it would have happened a little bit early in the corner, I think that would have been it. But thankfully, it was kind of already when the corner was finishing up and leaving the banking. But it was just pure luck. I'm not going to lie to you. I definitely, I crapped myself, and I did not make that move for the rest of the race.
Did you participate because I just can't remember who did and who didn't, in the Highline testing last year on race weekend?
I did not. That ended up being Takuma. So, because they said one person from each team, so we decided to get the veteran up there.
And where are you going to go? Are you going to be a part of it this time? More teams are, and there's more tires, et cetera, I think. So where do you stand on that?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, we're definitely going to do it. I mean, the more help we can get, because I do actually think what they did last year, I think, had somewhat of a difference, at least for the start of the races. I mean, once you get into the racing and that lane starts to marble, that high line, there's just no chances. I don't know how you can really fix that. But yeah, no, it definitely helps, at least for the start of the racing. And we just get more runs. Although it's high line, you know, you get to practice. It gets you more confident going into the race.
Does anything, and David Malukas is joining us, does anything about this event help prepare you for the Indy 500?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so many things. Like I said earlier, I think this is probably the toughest oval out of all of them. It's just so special. It has its own characteristics. It's so quick. I mean, sometimes you can actually feel like your face being smushed down to the bottom right-hand corner from how many Gs you're hitting in the corners. But yeah, no, it definitely helps so much. I mean, other than the 500, I feel like this is the quickest oval that you can get yourself into. So it kind of just gets you used to this kind of high-speed racing, you know, side by side.
So following up on that, did Indy, by comparison, and you had some time in between, but did it almost feel like it slowed down a little bit?
Oh, for Indy, yeah. I mean, because it's a lot bigger, you know, with Texas, it's obviously it's not nearly as large as the 500. So a lot more compact and the racing's a bit closer. But I mean, for the 500, the thing is you have an entire month, like one whole month of laps and laps and laps. So you just get so comfortable with it and so used to it. So by the time qualifying comes or the race comes and you have a couple little moments, I mean, you're kind of just very confident since you've had these little moments for an entire month now and you already know the car that you have underneath you.
It's a very compact schedule with just a morning practice, qualifying, and then an afternoon practice. And the conditions are going to be at 8 a.m. local, I don't know what you're going to get out of that first practice. What do you work on that first practice?
I mean, we're going to try to do everything that we can. You know, it's, yeah, the timing obviously isn't great, but, you know, we don't have a lot of it. So, I mean, we're just going to run through our normal plans and just try to get the best that we can and make sure that we have somewhat of a setup going into qualifying. You know, that's the whole goal with Oval, is trying to be right on the edge of spinning out, but not, because that's where it's quick. Yeah. So
let's go back to St. Pete. You survived, which is something to be said. What did you take from that weekend and getting the season started off with the top 10?
Yeah, what a race that was. That we were actually joking on the radio. I felt like a cat with nine lives, because I felt like I was also involved, like at least near all these incidences. And it was quite funny. I was saying, oh, there goes another life, you know, kind of running out now. But no, that race reminded me a lot of Nashville. We survived, you know, thankfully we kind of stayed away from everything. We had a good strategy. Unfortunately, we did get a drive through at the beginning, and we managed to make that time back up and finish with the top 10, you know, and going into the season, that was kind of our goal. We want to just be consistently getting top 10s. You know, we don't want to be at, like, you know, of course we would love a win, but, you know, trying to be realistic, I think top 10s is where we want to be. And I think St. Pete went really well. You know, we had a really good car. We went a little bit, you know, we found the right direction in practice. We didn't go enough into that direction for qualifying. So we made a few mistakes, but you know, it's kind of the mistakes you make for an early season start. So overall, I was very happy with it. And I think it's a good way to get the season started.
Maybe a two-part question here. The first part, how much turnover has there been? I mean, we look at the crews and we think we remember this crew member from this team last year. How much turnover was there at Dale Coyne Racing and on your car? A large percentage, somewhat changeover, or very little?
So going from everyone in general, we had a small turnover. It's just we kind of had the important factors of, you know, that we lost. You know, we our engineer, my engineer, Ross, he ended up going to the number 9 of Scott Dixon. So at least now I have another driver to look out for if I get out of the race. So I know who to vote for. But thankfully though, it wasn't too bad, because Alex was the assistant engineer for us last season. So I already was very comfortable with him. And all we did was just, you know, Alex, my assistant engineer, moved up to my main engineer. So all the relationships, the chemistry, and everything's still there. So it was just a bit of a change, a few things here and there. But overall, it's kind of just kind of right where we left off.
Yeah, so the follow up was going to be: Was St. Pete kind of it wasn't so much of a getting to know you session, because you guys were pretty much in tune from a year ago.
Yeah, no, you know, everybody's still the same. We knew everybody. We had a bit of, you know, a little bit of changing around in the stands and you know, who's talking on the radio and strategy and whatnot. But overall, all the changes are for the better. So it's been very good. And, you know, it's a lot of the same people. So it's just, everybody's a lot more comfortable.
So I've been asked this a couple of times recently. I've seen this on social media with the Sebring 12 hour just happening. And then my son just raced in a pro series car there last weekend. And we get asked, why can't IndyCar race there? What an event that would be if they could work together with IMSA or do their own event. So I looked it up, and you raced there in an F3 car, the FR America's car, which until last weekend was the fastest formula car that we had seen for a while. The pro cars are just maybe a couple of seconds faster. What's your opinion of the full course? I'm talking turn 17 and turn 1 in a formula car, and then imagine adding another 40, 50 miles per hour to that, or 30, or whatever it is. Could an Indy car withstand the full course at Sebring?
Yeah, that is a good question. I mean, when I was there in the F3 car, it was bumpy. I mean, it was so bumpy. I actually remember I think it was the first race, in the last corner, I bumped so much. And when I added the power down, I just spun just from the bumps. So I don't know. With an Indy car, that sounds very rough. It would be very interesting, a very characteristic. Personally, what I wanted, I'm not the greatest fan of Sebring, but also, you know, that's kind of the only place that we really get to test in the off season, you know, to prepare for street courses. So that could be also another reason why I'm not a great fan, you know, because I've done so many laps there. But I don't know, it would be interesting, to say the least, that's for sure.
Well, that short course is a different matter, and that's like a 52 second lap, and that's bumpy. But the airport runway is another level. And I'll just tell you, the consensus I got from everyone in the paddock this weekend is there is no way Indy cars would be able to withstand that. The ride height would be like a foot off the ground to make it work. And I'm not even sure if the junior formulas are going to go back. I think too many cars were just, without crashing, torn up this weekend. So it's pretty tough to go all the way around there.
Yeah, I was thinking about, like, do you need a mouthpiece, like a football player, to kind of help your teeth? You know, and just the congestion of the lap would be pretty significant. But, hey, anything's possible, I suppose. Was there a track last year that that maybe surprised you how good it raced in an Indy car?
Iowa, actually. Iowa was, from my experience, I loved Iowa. That was honestly one of the most enjoyable races throughout the season. I was going into it being like, wow, this is kind of going to be chaotic. I don't know how this is going to be. It's so short. Is the racing going to be good? But it was fantastic, especially with the strategy. You know, you get when everybody's kind of starts changing onto a new set. I mean, the gap of time was almost like 3 seconds. So, I mean, if you're on a new set, it was just a blast. You get to drive around people right around the outside. And it's just, I just felt like I was like actually in a video game. It really felt like a video game, like Mario Kart or something. Like I got a power up and I'm just driving around the outside of people. And it was so much fun. I had no idea what position I was, what was going on. I had no clue. It was just pure fun, pure joy. Iowa was definitely took me by surprise.
There was one of those races with Ryan Hunter-Reay won that he and Joseph Newgarden got new tires and they restarted maybe, I don't know, 12th, 15th or something with like four laps to go and just passed people like they were standing still. So we certainly have seen what you described.
And then the next oval you did, you almost won when you finished second at Worldwide Technology Raceway. Did that Iowa experience and then what you did at Gateway, does that apply to Texas this weekend? Do you have a little more confidence on ovals that you did this time last year?
100%. You know, after getting used to the car that we've created with the team, I think it's amazing. Going from Gateway, going from Iowa, I've managed to get all sorts of practice. Obviously, I had the 500 as well. I know exactly how the car reacts, what to do, all the new little tools I get to use for ovals. So going into Texas, definitely 100%, so much more confident than last year. I mean, last year, I'm not gonna lie, I was thankfully I had the rookie test going into Texas. But you know, it's still, you know, you go into green flag. I'm not gonna lie, I was a little bit nervous for sure. But going into this year, I think we're definitely gonna be going for some good strategy and trying to get some moves up.
You're one of the drivers that came up. Most do come up through karting, but there's a lot of you that are about the same age. Maybe you need an entry list in front of you. But how many drivers in IndyCar right now do you recall karting against? I know you were on, weren't you on Lundgaard's team at one point, briefly at one point, but how many guys did you know before you got over to even the road to Indy?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Lundgaard, I grew up with, I mean, we were in the same team. It was the Ricardo kart, actually. We were in the same team in Bahrain. We were doing the Middle Eastern series, also some European series, but Lundgaard was the out of everybody in the IndyCar paddock, he's the one that I race the most with in go-karting. Stingray as well, my teammate, many, many go-kart series in the US with him. Other people, I mean, in the feeder series, Rasmus Lynn, a lot of laps and a lot of time with him as well. Callum, he was a little bit always ahead of me in the go-karting level. You know, I knew him, I knew he existed, but we never really managed to be in the same karting level together. And then everybody else, I mean, I think I did a few races with Herta and Pato as well. Pato, grew up with him. He was actually the first person, if I'm thinking about it. I was very, very young, probably like 9 years old when he was an Aero Minimax and I was an Aero Micromax. We were in the same team in Oklahoma, I think.
What was Pato like as a little kid?
Same.
And then I'm going to ask him what you were like as a little kid.
He was the exact same, very aggressive. He could drive anything and just always make it work. So he was the exact same way he is now. No, but he was great. He was an amazing teammate.
David Malukas, ready to go at Texas Motor Speedway again, coming up this weekend in the number 18 HMD Trucking Dale Coyne Racing with HMD Motorsports car. David, thank you much. Enjoy it. We'll see you very soon.
Thank you for having me.
All right, stay with us. We'll see some other things in preview hour two coming up in just a moment. We've got Indy 500 conversation and more on the way on Trackside.
Hi, this is Colton Herta, and you're listening to Trackside on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Okay, short segment here, but longer than normal that we have in this time before we get to hour number two. A few news items I want to get through here while we have a moment. First of all, is the business. You know, we're excited about seeing racing on the track again, but race cars don't go unless somebody's paying for them to go, and it all works together with the series. So what I'm getting to is it's really significant news that IndyCar has a new deal with their title partner to continue beyond the next, I don't know how long it is, but I know it's continuing on with NTT.
So this year is the last year of the first contract, and so they'll go multi-year. I didn't get terms, but I would suspect it's 3 years. And this adds, you know, really to a list of what is now the second longest entitlement sponsorship in IndyCar history behind PPG, which was involved with the series for a very long time, 18 years, I think. Anyway, I think the point is, you know, people talk about this not being a consumer-facing brand, but the technology that NTT and NTT Data Services brings to IndyCar and all the details you see on the broadcast and the app, the IndyCar mobile app, and all the information assimilation. You know, we get a lot of information off these cars, but how do you process it in bites that you can chew on? And, you know, that's what NTT and NTT Data provide. So it is a multifaceted sponsorship, which helps us both financially and just helps our knowledge of the sport.
And it's good for stability, too. It always seems like as soon as we get used to a title sponsor, they've moved on. So now it will become more recognizable. And it's mostly just, I think this is good for the health of the sport. It shows other potential partners and sponsors. It's basically NTT vouching for IndyCar. Hey, we're seeing value here. You can too. And it's more than just eyeballs, as we've talked about. It's about activating and making, using it to provide value. So fantastic news there. Indy 500 stuff. Everyone always asks about the Carb Day concert. I don't know who that is yet. You may. So you can go ahead and tell us. But go ahead.
No, I'm not going to tell you because I'd like to keep my job. Roger okay. Penske was in town. He would know that I saw you today, and therefore it would cost me my job. No, it probably wouldn't. But I think we'll know before the end of the week, perhaps.
Oh, okay. Well, we do know who the Legends Day concert is, and that's Brad Paisley, Russell Dickerson, and Jackson Dean. And just a reminder, this is not at IMS. It went away during the pandemic, and then it continued last year. This is what used to be, what was it called, White River State Park, something like that. It's now called the TCU Amphitheater. Is that correct, downtown?
That's correct. It's downtown across from the baseball stadium, so a good venue.
Yeah, really, really good venue. I know some people would like to see it at IMS. You know, makes perfect sense to me. You're hosting 300,000-plus people the next day. You might want some time to prepare for that, and having people on the grounds until 9, 10 o'clock, whatever you need, concert may not be perfect for preparing for that. And again, this is a cool venue, and I think a lot of people would probably rather migrate to downtown anyway. Out-of-towners are staying downtown. You can go to dinner. So anyway, seems like a pretty good option. I know who Brad Paisley is. I know he's a big deal, and I suspect the other two as well. So go with that.
Yeah, I think it'll be good. And Roger just likes to have the venue ready to go on race day. So I certainly appreciate that. I'm not one of the ones working all night, the night before the Indy 500. So let those guys get a head start.
Yep. Also, I want to finish up the hour. We're going to talk more about the Indy 500 coming up in the next hour. But I wanted to recognize maybe a name that fans would know, but this is kind of for us and the people that are in the paddock. I saw that Eric Schwartzkopf passed away a few days ago, and he had been dealing with illness. And to be honest, I don't even know what it is. I heard about this at St. Petersburg, and really? I didn't know that. It seems like just at the end of last season I saw Eric, but I think it had been a little longer than that. So Eric was a freelance photographer and just the nicest guy in the world, a friend to everyone. So I just wanted to offer condolences to his friends and family.
Yeah, Eric had been with us a long time in the sport, and it was his heart that had been failing him over the years, and he needed a very difficult and risky surgery, and he chose to go through with it. And it's a shame. He's such a big personality and a big physical presence in our sport. So not to have him is going to be difficult.
Sad stuff. We'll miss you, Eric Schwarzkopf. All right, we'll continue with more coming up. Trackside 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Hi, this is Joseph Newgarden, and you're listening to Trackside.
Hour number two. Thank you for joining us tonight. We are 2 months away. It's March 28th. We're 2 months away from the 107th Indianapolis 500. Kevin Lee, Kurt Cavan, Eddie Garrison, downtown Indianapolis. So the studio's on the circle. By the way, show's upcoming. We'll be into April next week, and we're Tuesday again on the 4th, the 11th, the 18th, the 25th, from 7 until 9, and then it's TBD. We'll check back in and see. I think we're doing daily shows, but I actually haven't asked that question yet, so we'll ask that question to see if and when we start daily shows in the month of May and go from there, and what our schedule will be beyond that. Kurt, we've got race cars on track, as mentioned, this weekend at Texas Motor Speedway, and we should remind people joining us late, and we'll talk more about this race coming up noon Eastern here on the radio with IndyCar Radio, IndyCar.com, the NTT IndyCar app, noon Eastern, 12:15 green flag. So very short pre-race, and that'll be 11 o'clock local time. So the first oval race of the season. We talked a lot about that in the first segment. So if you missed it, you can get it on the podcast, and we'll make some wildly unsuccessful picks a little later on. But let's speak of the Indy 500 and what's coming up in oval racing and Indianapolis racing. Couple of things to note. If you want to see cars, Indy Next will be testing at IMS on the road course, I believe, next week on the 5th. So I think that's Wednesday. And then after Texas, there will be some testing at Texas on Monday. So we saw the report last week about Linus Lundqvist testing a Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan car. I think I heard that Catherine Legg is also going to test. I don't know if they're sharing a car or they'll have two cars. So I have not seen a release from the team on that or from IndyCar. But, you know, I did notice Catherine on social media getting in for her seat fit, that we saw that shared yesterday or the day before or something like that. So I hope that's the case. From the Lena standpoint, we touched on that last week. You know what? Teams are always looking ahead. I think ideally, best case scenario for everybody is that things are going great. Nobody crashes and cars are in good shape and they run a fourth car in some events later in the year with the crew that they've assembled to run Catherine Legg. But beyond that, everyone wants to always have a plan moving ahead and some depth. And I think that's what Linus Lundqvist would give you, is it gives you some options down the road. And to some of it may be, and I don't know the financials, you know, in junior formula racing, it's, you can get a test if you can pay for it. So maybe somebody's paying for this and that's just the option there. Beyond that, it would be from the team standpoint, hey, let's take a look. At some point we may want a driver and we want to expedite the process and see what he is on the oval. That's probably the most challenging aspect for a driver moving up. We feel pretty confident that Linus Lundqvist is going to be quick on a road course and a street course. Nothing's going to be harder than Texas. And if he acclimates well to that in a test, we might want to think about looking for space for him in the future. So that's in the near term. We got the IMS test coming up on April 20th and 21st. So Kurt, let's talk now about what we think might happen for the Indianapolis 500.
Let me first clean up. I'm not sure that you said, maybe you did, that this is Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan going to field those two drivers. They have already committed to Catherine Legg as a fourth entry for the Indianapolis 500. Some of our listeners are just picking up the conversation, so I wanted to say that. And good Linus point. Lundqvist, who was the Indy Lights, Indy Next champion from a year ago, still doesn't have a ride. So we're we're thinking that Ray Hall wants to be prepared for the future. I just wanted to make sure we set the table properly with that team. And you know, we'll want to be paying close attention to how those three cars from that team run this weekend, because if they have crash damage with Christian Lundgaard, with Graham Rahal, and with Jack Harvey, that may be problematic and cause issues into Monday. So just, you know, you'll want to, I know Lundqvist and Catherine will be hoping for a clean race from the three car Rahal, Letterman, Lanigan team this weekend.
Yep, that's a good point. And there is not room. We're not going to start the rumor. I see less than zero chance of them running a fifth car. That's not going to happen. That is not an option for them to run a fifth car for Linus Lundqvist in the Indianapolis 500. One, the team would not want to do that. And two, Honda has said, we're out of engine opportunities. We don't have anything available. You know, okay, if Lewis Hamilton wanted to come over and Andretti wanted to run him, I suspect they would probably find space for him. But in this scenario, that's not going to happen there. So any extra entries, and I'm starting to think more and more that I'm wrong about what my prediction was in the last couple of months, and I'm happy that I'm going to be wrong. I have felt probably since November or December that it was likely going to end at 33. There just wouldn't be a lot of motivation to go beyond that. We kind of kicked around, and I know Racer.com wrote something about the potential of Able Motorsports, an Indy Next team, co-entering a team. So, okay, let's look at some people that might be interested in co-entering that have some funding but don't necessarily have equipment, like Peretta, that would come to mind. The Spirit of Speedway entry, who has tried to do some things at times before. Who else? Other, you know, we've seen Ballardi partner with teams before. I'm not aware of that in the horizon. The Enersons own a car, but obviously would need a team to field it. So those are some of the things out there in that kind of scenario. And then there was the Foyt angle as well. And the only other team that I could see thinking about it in the perfect scenario would be maybe a Juncos Hollinger. But I am getting a sense that there is, I'm not going to say it's going to happen. I don't know that it's going to happen. And I don't have enough sourcing to even say what I think might happen. But I'm hearing there is a better chance now at getting to even 35 with two more Chevys. And when I heard the consideration, I thought, you know what? Okay, I could see that happening. It makes some sense. And from their standpoint, I think they would feel like we can make the field. There is an opportunity for us to bump our way into the field. But, Kurt, that is one of the considerations, is you start to look at, all right, of the 33 that are in there, who do we think that we can beat? Because that's part of it.
Yeah, it is part of it. I don't like to think that way, because I like to think, and I haven't been around for 107 years of the Indy 500 or the previous 106, but that any competitor went into the 500 thinking, we enter a car, we do the right things, we're going to make the race. But there has to be some reality come into this, and you do have to think. But I don't think you're sitting there, if you're one of these groups considering a entry at kind of the last minute, if you will. Last minute now is decided to be April 1st. You know, it used to be, you know, you rolled out a car maybe even the last week of practice at Indy, but the last minute in today's game, and, you know, realistically, there's three or four, five cars that you think are in the mix for the last couple spots. And so you'll take your chances with that, especially if you've got a crew that you think makes sense. I think Foyt has to be in play if you're going to talk 35. I don't know if they're the 34th, but I think in some form, that's where I think an extra car would come from. That's the only, you know, I've kind of heard the same things that you're alluding to, nothing concrete, nothing that I think I could even, you know, pontificate about. But I do think that if it's going to happen with additional cars somewhere in there, Foyt has to be considered. And, you know, they've got one car that you would say, I mean, Benjamin Peterson doesn't have any experience in Indy 500. You'd have to think Santino Ferrucci would be pretty safe. But they'd want to make sure they got both their cars, properly entered and properly, assembled, so that they're not in peril come the final two or three spots for the race.
That's one of the conundrums I would have if I'm the Foyt team. If I enter a third car, am I bumping one of my full-time drivers?
That's right.
If no disrespect, but if you have to choose someone, if they're a 35, if you have to choose someone you think might be in peril, you're going to look at rookie drivers, and you're going to look at the last time there was bumping, a Foyt car was bumped. That's just the way it is a couple of years ago. Doesn't mean that they won't both qualify or all three qualify in the top 15 this year, but we just don't know. We haven't seen Benjamin yet. I think he'll be fine eventually, but I just don't know. I guess you look at the team that only does the month of May. But that said, as we've talked about before, and this isn't just lip service, Dreyer and Reinbold is solid. And even though Stefan Wilson does one race a year, I feel even more confident about where he's at now that he has Ryan Hunter-Reay as a teammate. So I don't think they're going to be, somebody has to be on the back row, but it gets really hard when you start looking at who do we think is good. And the other part is there are surprises. Will Power almost missed the race a couple of years ago. Simona was in a Penske car. They struggled to make the race. We all remember Fernando Alonso didn't make the race. So it can happen. There's always a surprise of somebody that struggles when we get in. And, while I'm somewhat resigned to, okay, if it's 33, it's about the race. But I really hope it is 35. And 35, I don't know why I always like that number more than 34.
Well, I
feel bad about that one lone team and driver being left out. It's almost like there's comfort and there's, because it really is a challenge.
Yeah.
If there are 35, the pessimistic point of view I would have is, if I'm a competitor, I would be worried no matter who I was, because you just don't know what can go wrong. And there are probably 10 then are going, I can't guarantee that we're going to be safe. We better not crash on Friday of qualifying week or we're going to be on the back foot and in peril.
You mentioned the rookies. There's what, three of them? Unless I've forgotten one, there's Canapino. There is Stingray Robb, and there is Benjamin Peterson.
Got to put him on the list.
I'm not willing to put Stingray Robb on the list. Now
I think I'd put him highest. Yes,
and it's not because he's been a blur on the oval necessarily. In fact, he told me the other day. He said, that's been a challenge for me, but the Dale Coyne team has not had challenges in the back of the field with any regularity. They've done pretty well with speed. Correct. As it relates to Indianapolis. So I would put the Dale Coyne car ahead of the other two. Juncos, it's not like their lead driver, Callum Ilott, has mastered Indianapolis. He crashed early in last year's race. It wasn't, he's taken to it pretty well, but, you'd have to say that those two cars would be at least ones you would at least would get your attention. Canapino's never run an oval. Peterson at the Foyt car has never run an oval in the IndyCar series. In fact, his IndyCar experience to this point lasted two corners in St. Pete. So we're going to have to see on Peterson. No disrespect. He's run on ovals and Indy Lights. But anyway, Catherine Legg's program, not because Rahal will struggle, because I don't expect that, but that's their fourth car.
But they did struggle last year. That's why she's on the list. We need to see what they are. If they are what they were 2 years ago, when Graham, without an incident on pit lane and then a wheel came loose and he crashed, he feels like that was his race to win. He certainly was one of them. He was one of three or four or five that was going to have a great chance. But last year, they weren't super strong. And if they're not super strong, combined with a driver who hasn't been in this kind of a car in a decade or close to it, that will be a little bit difficult. I think she'll be fine because this will be the first time she's actually had preparation time ahead of it and proper teammates and so forth. But when you start to have to make a list, you have to put that scenario on the list. Yeah, in that situation.
And you might put more than one of their cars on there, whether it's Graham or, you know, Christian Lindgaard. He fared pretty well last year, but Jack Harvey's situation, you'd be watching that car, you'd be watching Graham, you'd be watching, I mean, you might be watching a Penske for all we know. So, you know, it's interesting back there.
As for drivers, so here are the list of drivers that I think I know which two drivers are being targeted, and I'll just say it's in this list. So J.R. Hildebrand, wondering if he can come up with something and partner with someone. You know, Linus Lundqvist, my guess is I'm going to say I doubt it's him. He probably wouldn't be testing for a Honda team. Maybe he would, but it's not like he's testing with one Honda team and is going to run for another Honda team. Honda is not entering another car for Linus Lundqvist in this year's Indy 500. Simona DiSilvestro, we know that the effort continues, and Beth Peretta has not really spoken publicly on this for a while, so maybe she's withholding some good information. I think she's her tactic has generally been, I'm not going to really speak until I have something to say. And the fact that she hasn't said, we're out, means I'm going to give them a chance, because she's not said, we can't get it done, we're going to work on races later in the year or next year. I've not heard that from her. Who else? You know, I don't think you could worry about it. It's not going to be any of the NASCAR guys this year. It's not Jimmy Johnson. It's not Kyle Busch. It's not Kyle Larson. I don't think it's Juan Pablo Montoya. Charlie Kimball, you could still keep him on the list. I don't think Charlie's planning on it, but if something came around, maybe. I know Ed Jones. I saw Ed at Sebring. I did not ask him about the 500. I talked to him about it at Daytona. I did not. Mostly he just said he was running the truck race at COTA this past weekend. And he said, so I hear they're just going to shove me out of the way. Is that how this works? And I said, yes, yes, you're just going to get, and he had a mechanical and really didn't even get to race. But as we saw in the cup race, as what Jensen Button said, they don't brake. They use the guy in front of them as the brake, and that Jordan Taylor went through the same thing. But anyway, I see Oliver Askew at most weekends. He was at St. Pete, saw him at Sebring. I have not talked to Oliver in the last few weeks. R.C. Enerson, I mentioned, I'd keep an eye on him. Matthew Brabham was working over the winter to try to find something. Maybe Zach Vecho. It's somewhere in that list would be my strong guess, if indeed this comes to fruition. So fingers crossed that we get some extra entries, and it's tight. And I think it would be. I don't think the scenarios that I'm hearing, it's going to be, you know, unfortunately, Top Gun, we kind of knew, was going to be really difficult to do the way they did it a couple of years ago. I don't get the sense it would be that way this year, but we shall find out.
Yeah, I think so, too. I do know that Beth Peretta is going to be at the open test. I'm scheduled to host an event at the IMS Museum, and she will be the guest of honor at that event on Friday, the Fuel Up Friday. If you're a museum member, you should look into that event. It's a really enjoyable one-on-one type of event that I've hosted a lot of those over the last few years. Did one recently on St. Patrick's Day with Derek Daly, which was terrific. I told him I might as well just introduce you and get out of the way and go to the next room, because you can handle these you know, he does lecture series for an hour in front of large companies. He didn't need me to ask him questions.
Which I also was aware of, so we'll announce this later date, but since we just talk amongst ourselves here, I've hired Derek for an event, and that is the plan.
Yeah.
I will just hand him the microphone, and I'll go stand over by the bar. So we'll have details on a couple of events coming up Indy 500 week in the near term, and Derek will be involved in one of those. What else do I want to get to? And we'll talk, you know, normally I talk about how Jackson's weekend went in the very last segment. There was a lot to cover, and not just with him. So we're going to do that in the next segment. I thought there were a lot of interesting things, and I want to highlight some of the other young drivers that had awesome weekends, and some are local drivers too. So we'll get into that. But since I was back at a racetrack, sometimes you learn some different things. So the USF Pro Championships were at Sebring this past weekend, and I bumped into Tony Kottmann. He said, hey, world traveler, just back. It was like the day after he was in Argentina. So Tony is a track designer. He's a race steward, a race director. His company is NZR Consulting, and they always work with IndyCar on when they're going to go to a new venue. Tony's the one that kind of says, yep, this is good or not. And I said, what'd you think? Is there any issue? And he said, no, this place would be fabulous. It would be a great event. It would be awesome. And obviously, he's not on the business side of things. So, you know, I didn't bother asking whether they're going to have a race or not. That's for someone else to decide. But I don't get the impression there are any concerns other than, can someone finance it? So if someone can finance it, it sounds like it would be an excellent event. Where it ends up on a calendar, if it does, whether it's a points race, I do not know. But I always like more. We like to see more events. We like a longer season. Maybe fill this gap that we just had. That'd be awesome too.
I just don't see it as a non-points race. I think if you're going to go to the trouble and you're going to bring your teams and
I think, yeah,
you'd want it part of the championship. I just don't see us in the business of hosting exhibitions, if you will. You want to know it matters, mm-hmm. unless it's some big financial prize. But let's just pay points. I mean, that's what everybody's in for a championship for. And I know it. You know, racing in South America doesn't help as many teams as you would think from their sponsorship standpoint, North American sponsors. But, you know, you get a chance to air a 2.5 hour race, which can serve as, you know, kind of a commercial for some of these sponsorship programs. I think it's good for business. And so having more races is good. I know Roger doesn't want to go, you know, exceedingly high. He might go to 18 races, and we have 17 at the moment. So I think it stands to reason it very well could happen.
Well, I think it allows IndyCar to drive a hard bargain, to have the upper hand in this negotiation, that we do not have to have this race. So it is going to need to be in our financial best interest.
Yep.
We're going to need to benefit financially, and the teams are going to need to benefit financially. So while they may not be able to bring many guests and entertain their current sponsors, they can put some money in the bank, which helps the bottom line, or it can grow the leader circle. And it's still a television event. They're on a similar time zone. I haven't looked what it is right now, but I assume they're within a couple of hours.
Yeah, I think
of what we are. So you can make that work. Could you put it in between St. Pete? You've still got Sebring to deal with. You know, another thought is, so I did see, this was on my notes last week, and I still haven't gotten that. I saw that they announced dates for St. Petersburg for, I think, the next 2 years. And I would say I was mildly disappointed, because I had kind of hoped that maybe St. Pete moves back a week, meaning instead of the first weekend of March, it moves to second week, which shortens that gap a little bit, which I also think helps some people from the Midwest who like to bring their kids down during spring break, because it was kind of a week before spring breaks would start. Now, I don't know what else you want to think about. There may be other considerations locally, and it's not like that event was hurting for people. It still did well, so I wouldn't change the date just based on when Indiana's spring break is, but I would maybe like to shorten that gap a little bit, unless you're trying to put something else in the middle of that. I don't think you'd ideally, I mean, could you open up? You've opened up in Brazil. You could open up, but ideally you'd like to open up at St. Pete. So if you get Argentina between, maybe St. Pete moves up to the last weekend in February, like it was last year.
I did just look up. It is 1 hour ahead of us in Buenos Aires. So
okay.
A 1 hour time difference obviously doesn't impact things.
I even looked up today. Could you drive there? You know, because it is connected.
You could do it.
Well, I don't know. Google Maps did not give me an option.
Oh, well.
So there, maybe the Panama Canal gets in the way there or something
it
like
might,
that.
And yeah, very
you,
well
you
could.
You can't drive through there. But that's one of the things that will be keeping an eye on and hoping for some good news too, because I'd love to see the schedule just expand a little bit. I hear people talking about 20. The people I don't hear talking about 20 are Roger Penske. So that's why I don't think that's, and even Mark Miles told me a few weeks ago, no, I don't think we're going to get to that. You'd have to be overwhelmed by those numbers. So adding by one and then just adding a little bit of competition, I think, is kind of what you're looking for to make sure all of your other venues are solid and strong too. All right, coming up in just a moment, I know there are some other things I have on my list that I want to get to, so I'll reassess. We'll get to that. We'll talk about what Miles Rowe did in the USF Pro Championships over the weekend and some other interesting stories from there, ones you may not have heard yet, all coming up. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Hi, this is Will Power, and you're listening to Trackside.
All right, still a lot more to get to. Let's do this. This is not super positive news, and I don't know what the best path forward on this is, but if you're looking for a video game, unfortunately, you're not going to see one anytime soon. And Motorsport Games released an earnings report or something over the weekend where it was announced that it's not going well and we're not going to be ready. And it was obviously phrased in different manners that we want to make sure it's done properly and so forth. So I don't really know where this stands. I saw some quotes from Mark Miles that it's still very important. They like to see this come together. And what kind of adds to it is the fact that the iRacing component is not the same as it was because of an exclusivity opportunity for Motorsport Games. So yes, less than ideal. I don't know what the contracts say or how that worked, or maybe iRacing was also asking for financial compensation as well. Who knows? Luckily, that's not my department, but the wait will continue. And if and when we see more definitive information, we will share that and move on from there. Kurt, I wanted to speak for a moment. Normally, I do this the very last segment, but there was a lot going on in the series formerly known as the Road to Indy. The USF Pro Championships at Sebring this particular weekend, and we'll get to the driver, the official driver of the program, Jackson Lee, in the IU Simon Cancer Center, race for RP, Browning Chapman, Prime 47, number 47 car, good weekend. But need to mention Miles Simon. Will Power obviously was able Miles Rowe. Miles Simon, what, former Arizona basketball player, is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Miles Rowe continues to impress. So just missed out on the USF 2000 championship in his second season last year, running with Pabst again this year. I forget where he finished the first race at St. Pete, but it was good. It was on the podium. And then he's won the last three races, and he was hooked up this weekend. He won race two because of a last lap restart, but he had checked out, and you don't see that very often. He was almost a second faster than everyone else. Generally speaking, the Pabst cars are hooked up. I was quite impressed when my driver passed a Pabst car in a race, because that's kind of tough to do right now. They spent a lot of the weekend generally like 1, 2, 4 on the time chart. But Miles Rowe is, you can now start thinking about him moving up to Indy next year, because he's got a big lead in the championship and he really is looking like he's the real deal.
Yeah, it's really, really good to see on so many fronts. And I think, you know, one of the biggest is you want to be able to identify, you know, who's next, who's coming, you know, and we've been able to do that over the years. Kyle Kirkwood comes to mind. We've been able to kind of watch a driver, you know, make the progress through the ladder. So good for Miles, bad for the field, but good for Miles.
Now, it's still early and sometimes things get changed around a little bit, but you know, and from the business standpoint, this will potentially save your employer about $700,000 next year, because he is funded by Penske Entertainment and he is in line to win the scholarship to move up to Indy next season. Also wanted to mention Simon Sykes, who won his first USF 2000 race. And this is, you know, more of one of my biases. Simon was Jackson's teammate when they ran an F1600 together and they worked really well together. and enjoyed each other. And Simon has come close a couple of times, and he's like us. He doesn't have the budget generally to run the full season. He, I don't believe, has a budget to run a full season this year. So he's going to need some help. And he won his first race also with Pabst, and he's been on the podium, I think, two other times, and he now leads the USF 2000 championship. So congratulations to Simon Sykes, who's from the Atlanta, Augusta, Georgia area. Elliot Cox is a young fellow that's raced at Newcastle for quite a few years, and he's racing with Sarah Fisher's team. Some may not know that Sarah Fisher Hartman is in the USF Pro Championships in USF 2000. Elliot's from the Indianapolis area, and he did really well over the weekend. I'm going to say, I think he finished, I should have this in front of me, but he might have finished on the podium in race two, but I know he was top five. He finished fifth, and what was notable is he got sort of punted and dropped back to 11th and got back to fifth in race two, and he had a pretty decent race one as well. And there are a lot of people we know running that program, like Andy O'Gara, Greg Beck, former IRL team owner, I think is their engineer. And I remember seeing someone else I recognized over there as well. So congrats to Elliot, Andy, and Sarah and company. And you remember the story of Felipe Giafone being called from Babies R Us in, what, 2005-ish to go run for AJ in the Indy 500? Came in, you know, last second thing. He was in town shopping and qualified a car for the 500. Well, that baby won a race this weekend. Nicholas Giafone in USF Juniors was one of the winners. So I didn't get a chance to see him. I looked across the paddock and, hey, that's Felipe Giafone. And then I looked and his kid had just won in USF Juniors. So that was good. Now to our driver. And so just the headline first, he finished fifth, which is really, really good. And so I got a text from a friend after St. Pete, and it was more of I'm sorry, it looks like it's not going well. And I don't think people kind of understand the different levels. The cars kind of look the same, but Jackson moved up to another level this season. And, you know, I know he has a different expectation than I do. He's a competitor, and it's, hey, I'm here to win. I expect to be up front. And when he's not, he's disappointed. Dad is a little more pragmatic and looks at the roster. So part of our philosophy in moving up, because as I advise people as well, you know, one of the general thoughts is you don't move up until you've won at that level. And he didn't win, and he wasn't, because of budget reasons or getting crashed, able to finish the season in USF 2000. So it would have made a lot of sense to do another year in USF 2000, and that was the plan until Cape Motorsports shut the program down and moved up to Indy Lights. We really liked them, and we would have run for them again. Probably another team or two we would have considered, but they had full guarantees for their seats, and that's what they were asking for, you know, the full $400-some thousand last December, which we did not have. So we had to look at other options. And then when the option of Peter Dempsey's team came together, we've always kind of wanted to work with Peter, and that's how the decision was made to move up, if it looked like he was good enough. And he's done well enough in the testing, so it's a development season. He's been running mid-pack, and that's good enough. And in race two, he was battling 9th, 10th till the last lap. There was a caution, took forever to get cleaned up. So a one-lap dash to the finish, restarted 10th, got a couple of guys between like 10 and 13th. He was 8th, and then here's a new one for you. He was moving to the left. There were two drivers battling. He was moving to the left. There was a chance he was going to be able to get one or two of them there. And then it became much easier because the kid in, I guess he would have been in sixth, his fire extinguisher went off in the cockpit going 135 miles per hour through a kink. So that means he can't see. So he obviously is checking up, panicking. Kid behind him hits him, so takes both of those out. So my first thought is, do you really have to pay the crash damage when the fire extinguisher goes off? I'm not sure that's the driver's fault, but it's probably how it works. So he gets two more spots there, keeps his foot in it, gets a nice run out of turn 16 going down the Ullman straight, the long straightaway, and then makes one more pass, clean pass to the inside, back on the main straightaway, and finishes fifth. So that's like a win. And you look at some of the kids that are in this series. There is Francesco Pizzi, won the LMP2 Rolex 24. He's pretty good. He ran FIA F3 last year, and his team was not good, and he was their only point scorer of the season. Liram Zindelli, these kids are 22-ish. He's, I know he's won an F3 race, and I think he's been on the podium in F2. So these are Indy Lights capable drivers. Joel Granfors was runner-up in British F3. It's now called GB3. But this is a serious level series, somewhat on par. It's kind of probably between Pro 2000 and Indy Next. Reese Ushijima, I think, was on the podium last year in F3. So also part of my thought process in moving him up is, hey, there's normally only 12 cars in Pro, and we tested against them, and he was at times second or third. Well, I think all the kids, all the European drivers and some from South America saw what Louis Foster did last year, come in not knowing the tracks, win the championship, win the scholarship. It's a much better path than Europe. So after we made the commitment, about five or six hot shots came in, and it's gotten a lot tougher, but it's legit. So normally I'm not the bubbling bragging dad, and not being the bragging dad here, but I will say this. This is real high level racing, and I was quite impressed, because this is not junior formula racing. This is the big leagues, and to just be able to compete and pass some of these guys back and forth and race with them, I was quite impressed. Where it goes, you know, we are in the position where we still need to find some budget to get past May. But if nothing else, finishing top five in one of these races was cool. So that's our moment. And I was excited for the driver of our program.
Well, good for you. And as I've said many times, I'm as impressed with how he's matured off the track. And so that's, I think back to where this program started 10 years ago. And I think you'd be very pleased with how Jackson's matured.
Finishing fifth helps out the budget finding. It's a little easier to sell a driver. And by the way, we have packages available, and I have a suite in May for pretty much every day at Indianapolis. And that's kind of what we're doing. We're trying to combine some hospitality, and you get a sticker on the car, but mostly it's about entertaining guests and clients. So if you have an interest for your corporation, we will provide you a real value on that. Now, let's get to Texas. What's going to happen this weekend? Who are our picks?
Well, I think you have to go Team Penske. They finished 1-2-4 last year, and the Ganassi guys were really good. Marcus Ericsson led the race, finished third. You know, Scott Dixon, again in the mix. He's won five times there. He will be good again. Alex Palou was quietly good last year, and Jimmy Johnson was their other driver, their fourth driver, if you will, and he finished ahead of Palou. They were all in all those Penske and Ganassi cars in the top seven. You know, the guest we had tonight, David Malukas, had a really good first oval race in the IndyCar Series. He was 11th, and I think you're going to see good racing. I think the temperatures will be down. I think we're going to see, you know, multiple lanes, maybe not like the old days, but I think it'll be certainly good enough. And I think after more guys have a chance to run in that high lane in that Saturday afternoon practice, that there will be guys braver. And we saw it in the race. There were two or three guys last year early that got up there in the higher lane, didn't worry about traction, and just said, I'm going for it. And a second lane sort of developed. So I think we'll see more of that this year.
The Penske's will be strong. I'm going to take a moment and jump off the Scott McLaughlin train and not pick him for this week. By the way, I also think I don't know why. One, because he's good at these, but it's been a little bit. I think Ed Carpenter is going to have a strong weekend. I think Renus was strong last year in the race. I think Ed will get off to a good start to his season. I'm not going to predict him to win. I'm going to say Colton Herta, who I don't think has won an oval race yet. He's been fast at some of these. I'm going to say Colton Herta breaks through and wins his first oval race coming up this weekend.
Yeah, there's five drivers who have won races in this series but have not yet won an oval. Colton Hurt is one of them. Alex Palou, Scott McLaughlin.
Well, that's a good pick, too.
Felix Rosenquist, who was on the pole last year, by the way, and has run well at Texas, considers that really his favorite oval. No disrespect to Indy, but he really enjoys racing it at Texas. And Rinus VK has won a race but not won on the oval yet. So those guys,
McLaren cars were good, too.
I think we got, like, what, nine drivers who have won oval races in this series. Graham, Pato, Alexander Rossi, Ed Carpenter, Pagano, Sato, Castroneves, Dixon, Power, and Newgarden. So there's your list.
Well, I come up with about nine then that I think can win as well. So that's what we like. It's not that which one of the Red Bull cars are going
win.
We have some options. And I'm a consumer this weekend. I will be strapped in and ready to go. All right, we'll see what we missed and any late tweets coming in and more, all on the way. Trackside 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
Hi, this is Pato Award, and you're listening to Trackside.
Okay, final segment, and what we missed, a few tweets. This one goes back to, I guess it was yesterday, John Day, 81 Indy, asked, whatever happened to the old Jonathan Bird cafeteria that was formed years ago? Is it still active? Or is it gone by the wayside? I don't believe I believe the cafeteria in Greenwood has been closed for quite a while, but the family still is in business. What is it called? It's Jonathan Bird's Events and Catering is what they still do. And David's son, Nathan, races. He did maybe a couple of USF 2000 races last year before, and does some USAC stuff as well. Other questions that have come in here recently for the love of Indy. Going back to our Indy 500 discussion, says that Jack Benyon on the Race IndyCar podcast episode released today hinted that J.R. Hildebrand is working on something and that Hildebrand hoped to have something, some exciting news for the next episode. So that may or may not be Indy 500 related, but I wouldn't totally rule that out as well. By the way, I was going to mention this at one point. Jack Benyon does a really nice job. We tend to cite the same journalists who are really in the trenches in IndyCar. And Jack Benyon at the race has been at this for, I'm going to say, at least the last 2 or 3 years and has really good stuff and really good insight you can find online as well. So we always like to have more. We like to have more to read and more information. For the Love of Indy also tweeted that Argentina is an hour ahead of the Eastern time zone at the moment. I think Kurt mentioned that. Matt Archuleta looked it up. PGA is on after the race on NBC on Sunday. So yeah, I suspect it's kind of two things. There's something else NBC needs to air, but I still think from a TV perspective, if you could pick the time earlier is probably better unless you're just a massive event. Now, it's a different conversation if you're talking about what draws the biggest crowd. That is a little bit more difficult, honestly, to get a crowd to come in for an 11:15 a.m. local race. We shall see. And George Phillips, Oil Pressure Blog. Yeah, maybe my Colton Herta pick. History shows that may not be the best, but I'm sticking with it. George points out that in 34 races, and I'll trust his research, he says an Andretti car has found victory lane at Texas one time. And that was 2004 with Tony Kanaan, so that means that Thomas Schechter and Panther have won since Andretti. Just bad luck? Is there an explanation? I got to think it's a combination of both. I know at times they haven't felt like their setup was very good there. I know they've had some bad luck as well, but that you can't just say that's just bad luck. They obviously have not had the best setup there over the years. So we shall find out. We'll be watching noon Eastern time, 12:15 green flag here on the radio and on NBC on Sunday. And practice starts early Saturday morning on Peacock. For Kurt and our guest David Malukas and Eddie Garrison in the studio, I'm Kevin. We'll see you next Tuesday night here at 7 on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.